Today is May 4, 2005. I'd like to call the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development to order. Concerning the bill 2174, the amendment is not ready, so we are going to revisit this 21 House Bill 2174 sometime later, whenever it's ready, if not this Friday or sometime next week, with the approval of the Speaker. And with that out of the way, and which one shall we go first? 23.
Yeah, I just can't decide.
Okay.
I don't have a recommendation for you.
I thought you were supposed to tell
me. I think we should go with your bill.
My bill?
Yes, your bill. I think your bill, Mr. Chair.
Is this my bill? Okay. Okay, I'd like to have a work session on House Bill 2349.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2349 has to do with the Strategic Investment Program, and it reduces the minimum private investment requirement from $100 million to $50 million for negotiating property tax exemptions under the Strategic Investment Program. It reduces the minimum private investment requirement from $25 million to $12.5 million in rural areas.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue. We have a potential revenue impact statement, which is pretty typical when it goes to another, to one of these, either revenue or ways and means. You won't get a statement on it until they'll do the analysis of the revenue impact in revenue or the fiscal impact in ways and means. You have a report on the fiscal impact, and that would be a minimal expenditure impact statement.
We have a fiscal impact statement.
Minimal.
Minimum.
When they issue a minimal, that means less than $50,000. They don't tell you how much, and they don't issue a statement to explain how they arrived at that. This is for 2349. Yes.
So still, do we need to send to the
This one goes to the Revenue Committee because it would have substantial revenue impacts, which are undetermined at this
time. Which one are you talking about?
This is House Bill 2349, and this has to do with the Strategic Investment Program. You know that the Strategic Investment Program...
Is this a minimum why I need to send to the revenue?
This is minimum fiscal.
Minimum fiscal, okay.
So it doesn't need to go to Ways and Means.
Okay.
It would have significant potential revenue impact because, as you know, the Strategic Investment Program has to do with not only property taxes but income tax abatements.
Okay, and I understand the Vice Chair Merkley has the amendment, which I haven't seen it yet.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my apologies on this. I'm a little behind in tracking what we were covering today, and my assistant is out, but I have asked Aaron to make copies. This amendment, which we'll have shortly, is designed to address a concern about this bill that I think was unintended. When I looked at this bill, what I looked at it as was an opportunity to take investments and make them able to participate in the plan down to $50 million. And I think that was the way it was described. I met with several people who spoke to the bill before, and my understanding of that was the intention. But although it's not apparent in the language of the bill, that number that we were changing from $100 million to $50 million is cited elsewhere and actually lowers the base for everyone participating in the program. And so if you go from, if you have, for example, a $300 million investment, then the base on which your property taxes are based would drop under this bill from $100 million to $50
million, mm-hmm.
which my understanding is that was not the intention of the bill, nor the intention of the one group that had applied for SIP this year, which was in the newspapers recently in regards to Intel's investment. So I spoke with the Legislative Council to get clarification of this. They said, yes, in fact, there was this hidden effect. And I asked them if they could propose a fix that the committee could take a look at that would make this program open to investments down to $50 million, but would not cut the base in half. for investments over $100 million. And this is what they came up with, and I think that it probably solves the problem. And so I would offer it for consideration by the committee for discussion. And we'll see that this key language is on page 2 of the amendment, 2A. If the total cost of the eligible project is at least $50 million but does not exceed $100 million, the total cost threshold should be $50 million. So for those groups between $50 million and $100 million, this would do exactly what the initial bill would do. For those that are over $100 million, then it says that the cost basis will be either $50 million or 50% of the total cost of the project. So if you add $100 million, it would still have a $50 million basis, but if you were at $200 million, it would have grown to $100 million, and over $200 million, it would continue upward. So there is some advantage for companies that would previously have participated. Say if they had previously been at $150 million and eligible, their base would have been $100 million. Under this, their base would be $75 million. And that's done so that there isn't a cliff effect created. Where when you go from $99 million to $101 million, you go from $50 million to $100 million as your base. And so this seemed like a way to open this up to smaller investments, phase into the old standard by the time that companies hit $200 million and try to honor the basic strategy of the old law, which was to have a $100 million base in place for very large investments. And so I offer that for discussion and consideration, and certainly would invite anyone present with the willingness of the chair who would wish to comment on whether this would be an appropriate strategy to do so.
I just want to thank you, Vice Chair Moakley, bringing this amendment. And then I'd like to call at this time Art. Art, could you comment on this amendment? Whoever.
Mr. Fox.
Okay, so Mr. Fox, if you'd like to join us, if you want to make a comment also, you're welcome to. Okay, thank you very much.
Chairman and members of the committee, I think I will initially defer to Art Fish because he's the one who follows these issues expertly within the department.
All right.
How about that?
Thanks, Ron. Welcome. Hello, my name is Arthur Fish with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department for the record. Thank you, Chair Lim. It's always an honor to be here, members of the committee. First of all, I just did want to note for sure, and that's why I was here today, to make sure that you understood that the department is favorably in support of the bill as it is. Obviously, the amendments are newly in front of me, so I'm still looking through them. Let's see here. Again, this would appear. We have two parts of the program. So I guess I can't. I don't know. I'm just going to fumble here. I'm not sure if I can figure out the whole ramifications right now of the amendment. But we have a rural part which starts at $25 million today as far as the threshold, and that would be dropped down to $12.5 million by the bill. I'm not sure how that would. Let's see here. We would total cost of the threshold. Okay, if the total cost is at least $50 million, but not the total cost would be $50 million.
I might interject here. I don't believe this affects the rural piece at all.
Yeah, it may not be meant to. I agree, but I'm not sure if it doesn't. Okay. Well, maybe that's what 2B is for. 2B is sort of saying if the project is. If the total cost is more than $100 million, shall be the lesser. Okay, so as you get up to $200 million, you would still fall under $100 million and then rise. It gets a little complex, but I think it would still provide a workable reduced ability for the bill to function for smaller projects. But not provide any necessarily additional benefit for the largest of projects like the ones that have essentially used the program to date.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. But frankly, I'm not sure, since we would be talking with the rural aspect of going down to 12.5 million, that, you know, this language, and, you know, you could approve the project, okay, but whether the exemption wouldn't, in fact, if the total cost,
in the rural areas, you know, if you have a project above 50 million or 100 million, this section 2
here on page 2 of the amendment might override the effect and make it potentially a little, well, maybe considerably less attractive as a tax benefit in a rural area compared to the current statute, where you would start at 25 million and then your exemption would rise. And I'm not sure if you were, say, $150 million or $200 million project in a rural area, you would start at, if I read this language, the way it's looking, you would probably start at $100 million. I'm afraid that's, I'm not necessarily comfortable that it would do, it wouldn't have some adverse effect at this point. That's my testimony.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Had I been better prepared, and again, my apologies, committee, I would have asked the drafter of this tax amendment to come up and speak with us. It is my understanding, if we look at section 28 under the law, ORS 285C is amended, and you'll note that section. Well, actually, I'm not confident either. It was my understanding that this does not affect the rural half and only the urban larger half. But one thing we could do, if it was amenable to the chair, members of the committee, is we could move this into the bill, engross it, and then reschedule it for your next meeting and make sure that it has the intended effect and doesn't affect rural projects.
Okay, and that is my intention anyway. So apparently we have some cleanup issue on this bill. So according to this amendment, and if someone wants to invest $150 million, then the threshold is $100 million.
So this is
far less advantageous. Any companies investing more than the $1 billion, $100 million, is just one percent, is it? And it's 10%, right?
It would be the threshold, or the basis, actually, tax basis would be 50% if you're between 100 million and 200 million.
Yeah.
Over 200 million, the basis would be 100 million, which is consistent with current law.
Yes.
So this would be still advantageous for companies that are in the $100-200 million range,
mm-hmm.
and it would be very advantageous, equivalent to the original bill, for companies between 50 and $100 million, because the basis there would be 50 million.
Okay. So the point I'm bringing up is that if the company invests in more than $1 billion, but then since it's $100 million, they are taxable only at 10% of the total project.
Yes.
But according to this, this is $200 million, then we are 50% of the. So that is some that the fairness in this issue. You know, so some companies. If usually under the SIP program, the company at least investing more than $1 billion plus, they can get a lot of tax benefit. But if it's less than that, that the benefit might be smaller, such as $200 million, only they can get a 50% of the tax benefit. So fairness is some of the things we need to consider. And Vice Chair,
I was going to ask the question again, and maybe it's just it is fresh. I want to make sure I understand. I'm curious once again about that investment range between the $50 and $100 million mark. Take a number. Take a $90 million investment that prior with the existing law wouldn't qualify
under this bill, with this bill and with the amendment would qualify for something. But I guess my question is, let's take that $90 million investment as an example with your amendment. Are we only giving them credit for $50 million of that investment? And is that what we're abating, if you will, the tax charge on $50 million worth of investment rather than $90 million worth of investment?
Yes, under the original bill, if you're at $90 million, the threshold is $50 million, and therefore you're eligible, and the amount of taxes that form the basis, which was obscured, if you will, by the initial draft, because it didn't give that portion of the law, also would be $50 million. Under the amendment, it's identical. The threshold is $50 million, and the basis would be $50 million. So for those projects, and the key language is at the top of page 2, if the total cost of the project is at least $50 million but does not exceed $100 million, so that's where our $90 million project comes in, the total cost threshold should be $50 million. And here, the word threshold, as I understand it, doesn't mean to participate in the project. It means the base on which the taxes are levied, similar to in the original bill.
Thank you.
Do you have any additional comment?
Thank you, Chair Lynn, members of the committee. Yeah, I would confirm that for the urban areas where rent program has been used traditionally, be that Eugene, Albany, Portland area, Medford, a project, this would create a reasonable sliding scale that would be, definitely proximate between the current law and the proposed bill. For rural areas, though, it would have an adverse effect, and it would, I can see, weaken or eliminate the advantage that they would have under the current statutes. That's, I think, fair to say. Thank you.
Any other comments? All right. And I'd like to bring it up again sometime, if not Friday, maybe next week. With the approval of the speaker to have another hearing, certain bills including others. And so let's revisit it.
If I may, Chair Lynn, members of the committee, certainly another amendment could be prepared that provided the same ranges and formulas, if you will, but said these are for rural areas, these are for urban areas, and that would be a kind of some complicated language, but it would get the job done.
Okay. Is it possible, can you work with Vice Chair Moakley to clean up, if there is any, and to make sure this...
Natural.
You want to say something? No?
No.
Okay.
I think Chairman Lund, members of the committee, I think the clarifying the implications of this amendment against the original legislative proposal that lowered the rural criteria to $12.5 million, this, I think, you could clear up the confusion on the urban area, and then that would make it clear in it, and then easy. I guess I think easy for us to communicate with companies as to how the program would work under those guidelines.
Yeah. Okay. And as soon as the legislative council clocked up so many works, and I hope we can get the amendment bring it up sometime next week. As soon as possible.
Wednesday. Sure.
And as soon as you have the copy, please provide me so I can study and prepare myself.
I'll email it directly to Jim or something and legislative council. All right.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, the information you gave us that referred to House Bill 2174, was that meant for this bill, 2349?
No, we are discussing at this time 2349.
No, I'm in art.
I mean,
okay.
Excuse me. Do you know this information that we received? Well, I'm sorry, from Mike?
Oh, from, yeah, you received it from Mike Salzgiver.
I think
that is on House Bill 3123. It's on incubator, business incubators.
It doesn't speak to that, and that's why I wondered. It said for tomorrow, and I was just wondered if they included the wrong House bill, and we should be looking at it.
Representative Nelson, could you tell me the bill that that material references again, please?
House Bill 2174.
Mr. Chairman, that bill's been carried over. That's been carried over till Friday. We didn't have amendments ready, and so we took it off of today's agenda.
Okay,
and
that
be
makes
on.
Sense.
Okay.
Just, thank you.
Keep that for Friday.
Thank you. So it is that bill. Okay.
Okay. And any other comments? Anyone members like to make on 2349?
Brief comment of support, Mr. Chair, to make sure we protect our rural counties and. I think Representative Merkley is on the right path.
Right. Thank you. If not, then I will close a work session on House Bill 2349, and we will bring this back whenever the amendment is ready. All right. And next, I'd like to open a work session, House Bill 3123.
Chairman, House Bill 3123 has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. This requires the Oregon Economic Community Development Department to adopt standards, objectives, and criteria for providing financial assistance to community-based incubation centers. It also defines business incubation centers. We have a no revenue impact statement on it and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I know of no amendments.
Okay. I'd like to call the MOP. Kashmir, am I pronounced correct? Close? Okay. Thank you. Welcome. I understand you are the legislative assistant, Representative Gary Hansen, District 44.
Yes.
Right? Welcome.
Thank you. Well, I could give about a 60-second summary of Representative Hansen's earlier written statement and then take any questions. Would you like me to do that?
Okay. Yes, please.
Neighborhood and community-based business incubator centers are providing low-cost, shared resources for emerging small businesses all over the country for success here in Oregon. This bill does not seek funding for this biennium, but it does give the Oregon Community Development Fund the ability to include business incubator centers in its toolbox for future grants. These small, quick on their feet centers provide absolutely critical tools, information, and contacts that many neighborhood startup businesses would never otherwise get. An example might be in North Portland, in Representative Hansen's district, we have a lot of displaced industrial workers. Some of them have a lot of valuable technical skills. For instance, they might be able to repair broken digital cameras, which there's a great consumer need for that. But a lot of displaced workers, they might have the technical expertise, but they don't have the business acumen to know how to start the business. That's an alien country for them. And a neighborhood-based business incubator center can provide them non-intimidating advice, accounting help, cash flow help, share office space to get them started. For example, in our part of Portland, rents are low, and for instance, on one of our busiest thoroughfares, Lombard Boulevard, you could rent storefront office space the size of this room for probably about $800, maybe less. If you divided that into 7 or 8 cubicles and throw in utilities, and you could probably rent an entrepreneur office space for $200 a month. Other investment expenditures could be providing, say, for a half-time accountant to provide assistance to start up businesses. Examples like that. Any questions?
Any questions? Okay. Representative Dallum?
Yes, we've heard of business incubators in Seattle, Tacoma, Spokane, Corvallis, and the example given is Portland. Are there communities smaller than that would bear example to business incubators?
Short answer, I don't specifically know, but I don't see why the same concept couldn't work in the Dalles or Lakeview or North Bend.
Good answer,
Bill. Or Daniel County.
I have to have a waiver.
That's a no vote.
Okay. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One question. Representative Dahlem, when I lived in Humboldt County, the city of Arcata, which is a small town, had a business incubator on food products, which had a certain amount of success, a certain struggle as well, but they can work in small towns as well. Can I just ask, just to clarify, all this bill is doing is to require the establishment of criteria for...
Correct. So even in the 2007-2009 biennium, no business incubator center may necessarily succeed in getting a grant, but the Oregon Community and Economic Development Department would have the authority to give a grant to those centers that had compelling applications.
Thank you.
All right, and Art and Ron, do you have any comment on this House Bill 3123?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I need to ask this young man if he was kidding about Yamhill County.
Yes, I was.
For the record.
Just make it.
Since I'm a co-sponsor of this bill now, I just want to be sure.
All right, Ron.
Chairman Lim, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ron Fox. I'm the manager of the Business Development Division for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. What I'm having distributed to you is some information that we discussed at the last hearing for this bill, and you asked for us to assemble. It is a report to you on the establishment and essentially funding criteria that is used now by the state of Washington for their business incubator program. And it also contains information on a number of business incubators that in one form or another exist in Oregon. There may be more. We were unable to identify more than the six that were here. We got to those because they are members of the National Business Incubator Association. And I think you will recognize the Open Technology Business Center, a recent endeavor by the city of Beaverton. It leverages off of the existence of the Open Technology Development Lab, Linus, the free access software component. And I'm familiar with the Onami. That incubator has been in operation in Northeast Portland for many years. I think the bill, as it's proposed, calls for criteria, but it isn't as clear as it might seek in terms of the expectation that the department will be required to provide funding. Our current funding mechanisms within the department, and as contained in the governor's recommended budget for the 2005-2007, do not include funding for operational expenses for incubator-type business operations. Our community development funding options could possibly include the capital funding for business incubators. They would be required to be associated with a municipality or another qualifying jurisdictional government unit. So, just as a little background to that, we've also looked at some of the national data, and based on some ranges of numbers, it would appear that incubators require somewhere in the range of $1.5 to $3 million of capitalization to open a facility with the incumbent resources to support small business creation. And they have operational budgets that range anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000 a year, again, depending upon the size and the complexity of the services that are provided. So just as some background, that data we gathered from the National Business Incubator Association.
Right. So any questions? Okay. Do you believe current programs we have could use or in a form of as an incubation and funding? Do we need to create a new bill to do that?
Chairman Lim, members of the committee, I think as I commented earlier, some of our existing what we call infrastructure funding capacity could be eligible if the applicant or the operation were a municipal jurisdiction, a city, a county, a port, one of those qualifying jurisdictions, for funds for a capitalized funds that would be repaid as a loan to the department. For the operational expenses, our current funding jurisdiction does not give us funding that can be applied to operational, the costs of paying salary, wages, and other related expenses for incubators in the current status.
If we send this bill to the Ways and Means, do you think you can work it out from the Ways and Means?
Chairman and members of the committee, I think the workout, I guess, would be we can easily develop criteria because those are readily available from the National Association. We can seek input and adopt those to sort of have an Oregon model to them. I think the issue that we're really deferring on is the issue of funding for such grants. I think, as the gentleman before me mentioned, the governor's recommended budget does not include funding for these type of activities in the 2005-07 biennium. So we can easily develop criteria that would be a relatively easy step. I think the question that's sort of before you is what's the implication for funding?
Mokley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, did you say this does have a subsequent reference to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I guess one question I would raise is, given that this is developing criteria and it took the grant portion out, if we might be able to ask the Speaker to eliminate that subsequent referral to Ways and Means. My own thought, and I'm saying this now, so perhaps there's some response here, is I was very impressed by the testimony the first time around on this bill. One of the things that one of the witnesses had mentioned was in one of the Washington incubators, the rent was above market rent. And I asked, well, why would new companies go to above market rent? And he commented in detail about that particular incubator, about the synergies that were provided, I think it was within the construction industry, between firms starting to start up and finding their market niche. And it seemed like the department is already well on its way to understanding when an incubator can make sense. And so I was very impressed by that. I think if we want to maximize the odds of the department developing this criteria and setting the foundation for the possibility of grants next session, it would be great if we could just send this to the floor. And so I would ask the chair if perhaps he could consult with the speaker about whether she could lift that subsequent referral and we could send this onward, given it has no fiscal impact as written.
Right. Any other comment or discussion? And Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fox, how did the University of Oregon use this incubator program?
Chairman Lim, Representative Nelson, I believe they used their incubator as a resource to research development and business concepts that emerge from their university's basic research. So they provide assistance to professors, entrepreneurs, graduate students that are utilizing the research developments that occur on the university's campus. So it's I think it's contained in the material we provided you from the National Association of Incubators. Incubators that have I think the word they use is a special focus, tend to have a greater success. I think university-based incubators, their special focus tends to be the development and the existence of new research discoveries that emanate from the research universities, and it is around those research discoveries that their successful incubators operate. I think when we were before you previously, I mentioned the University of Montana, which recently established an incubator. It is not on the campus, but it is immediately adjacent to their campus, and it is used extensively by professors, graduate students, and other entrepreneurial businesses that are working on sort of emerging technology business propositions. So they focused on the research component as well.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could we follow up and find out what they really have done? And did they really set up a 501(c) corporation?
Chairman Lynn, Representative Nelson, I'm not sure that the university has a 501(c)(3) as their operating entity, but I would we'll find out more detail on any
of this. Mr. Chair, I thought that was, you know, a criteria for once being accepted.
Chairman Lynn, Representative, I think the bill calls that may call for that. Some of these organizations may be integral to the university, as the case. I think I'm pretty sure that the Open Technology Business Center operates as a subordinate unit of the city of Beaverton. I'm not familiar with the incubator creative group, but Onami, I believe, is a 501(c)(3) or 501(c)(6) organization, and it is under that umbrella that they operate their business incubator. And as I mentioned previously, one of the unique focuses of the Onami Center is they have a commercial kitchen that's integral to their center, and it's around that commercial kitchen that a number of businesses, emerging businesses, have started in the food preparation business and then have evolved to their own facilities and operations. But I can provide you more information on the university program as well.
Interesting. Okay. No, I can appreciate that.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. If not, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'd like to know the intentions of the members of this committee, whether we need to to send to Ways and Means, or should we send to the Ways and Means as it is? Maybe they can find the money in there. And what is the choices of the members? And Vice Chair Mockley proposed that the to rescind Ways and Means.
I concur
with
that.
No, I think you said not.
Not rescinded.
Yeah, rescinded.
Yes. To not go.
Not go.
To Ways and Means.
Not go Ways and Means.
Correct. Okay. Go straight to the House floor.
Okay, that is
and
the...
And I concur with that as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
I concur, too.
Okay, it seems to me that's the direction the members is talking about. So we are going to... I'm going to write a letter with the intentions of the members to rescind send to the Ways and Means, and we might be able to send to the floor directly. And also... this is that the Representative Hansen and Representative Greg Smith is the sponsor of the bill. I also want to discuss with them also their intentions, what they are. The original intentions, and Representative Smith asked me to send to the Ways and Means. So let's find out how it's going to move. Okay. So I'm going to bring this
if
back.
You could find the money, he has that committee.
So let's. I'm going to assess the whole situation, and then I will discuss with the members here, especially vice chairs, and then we will decide how we are going to move, okay? Any comment you'd like to make? No.
No, it seems like, Mr. Chair, what we're doing is setting up the criteria, and then in the next session, I would suppose that we would be looking for funding.
Okay.
We will have a two-year running start. This doesn't seem like a real running start to me, but...
A walking start.
All right, and with that, I'd like to close our work session on...
Mr. Chairman, you'll be carrying this over till Friday, then, is that what?
Friday? At least let's get up to Friday. If not, then we can grab over the next week.
Just wanted to get that on the record so that we can...
All right. Okay. With that, I'd like to close House Bill 3123. Since no other business before this committee, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.